With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nick Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, such as those listening live, we've got Charlotte, Ian B, John, Mike, Nick, Pangolin Sandwich. You are one of the people who are getting the full-length ad-free version of our show, and you can listen live, chat with us as we record live, and so forth. And you can find out more how to support us at patreon.com/UKTech. Thank you for helping us keep the lights on. You make our worlds go round. Another person who helps my world certainly go round is Ian, who I'm reliably informed is very well after his nap prior to our recording.
Yes, I did have a short nap. I'd like to explain it away, but realistically, I'm getting on a bit, and a nap is one of those pleasurable experiences that I'm reluctant to give up.
And you are right to. Can I just check? Did you have any dreams?
I did. You know, it's funny, I was just about to say, I tend to have quite vivid nap dreams because I think obviously you wake up straight after. I mean, that's a ridiculous thing to say because you always wake up straight after. But I think there's something about the duration of a nap that it ensures quite vivid dreams. Now, you're going to ask me what I had a dream about, and I can't answer that.
Oh.
Because I can't remember, but I have a vague feeling about it. And I think something exciting was happening.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you are on your own for that. I wish we had one of the Red Dwarf dream recorders as a future thing to look forward to existing. There's an episode in series 2, I think it is, of Red Dwarf where the cat records one of his dreams, and I've always thought that would be cracking.
It'd just be nonsense though, wouldn't it? Like, you know, there's nothing useful that happens in dreams. It's just complete and utter nonsense.
Well, speaking of nonsense, let's talk about Virgin Media just very briefly as an update to the ongoing saga that is my internet connectivity woes. Just to bring you all up to speed, it was 5 days that my internet was out. It came back on the Monday, and on that day, I had cancelled. As you all know, I signed up to GigaClear. GigaClear being installed on the 14th of September. Very excited about this with my symmetrical upstream and downstream.
Super I would be excited as well. I mean, yeah,
I'm going to record an extra message while I'm having it installed and testing it out. It's going to be one of the geekiest things I will ever commit to recording and publishing. I can only
we'll have to see how interesting it is, but you know, if you can get the guy on the tape explaining what's going on.
Oh, I won't do that because then I need permission, but I can describe things myself. It's my house, but my land is my castle.
That's true.
Certainly get faster internet soon. But anyway, let's move on to some news, because there are a couple of key stories that I wanted to touch on this week. The first is the following. A sweeping set of regulations governing how online services should treat children's data have been apparently welcomed by campaigners as they came into force in the UK this week. This is according to The Guardian. The Age Appropriate Design Code, or ARDC, was written into law as part of the 2018 Data Protection Act, and that's where we got GDPR from as well. And it mandates that websites and apps from last week, Thursday, I believe, have to take, quote, the best interests of their child users into account or face fines up to 4% of their annual global turnover, which is the same maximum fine they face for breaches of the GDPR. Now, The Guardian continues that unless these services can prove their service isn't likely to be used at all by any children, those under 18, then companies have to either make sure that everything they offer is compatible with the code, or they must identify younger users and then treat them with care. So you can abuse the adults, basically, exploit them for all they're worth, but treat those children with care if you know that they are children. Now, separately to The Guardian, Wired explained that under this law, privacy settings are required to be high by default for children. A lot of this is open to interpretation and implementation, of course, but these are what's being mandated. They must also collect and retain only the minimum amount of data on children and have geolocation switched off by default with an opt-in option. Things like nudge techniques, as they're called, these are anything like prompts to suggest perhaps that children should disable these settings. They're banned under this law, so no nudges to, hey, maybe enable geolocation, hey, enable XYZ. Can't do that until you turn 18. And then parental controls also need to be implemented in a way that a child can comprehend. Again, lots of room for interpretation there, but these are the standards. Now, Wired also highlighted that many tech companies have been complying with this already, have been rolling out updates and announcing that they're rolling out updates, but none of them, it seems, have been admitting that the UK code is the reason why. For example, there have been TikTok, which has changed the way that direct messaging works for those under 18. Google has offered a right to be forgotten for teens who find images uploaded by parents or guardians in search results. There was also a change on Instagram at the end of August that asks users for their real age. And these have all been designed to adhere with this code, since renamed the Children's Code. But none of these platforms have explicitly mentioned that the change was prompted by their need to comply with the new law here in the UK. They're essentially saying we're doing this because we think it's important, and history has shown us that that's not generally the main impetus for why companies do implement things like this. Now, Charlotte in our live chat raises the key point that I was going to bring to you in, so she's beaten me to this, which is essentially, how do you ensure that a person's date of birth is correct? For example, what's stopping me when signing up for a new service to say, well, I'm 17?
Well,
and
nothing.
What is to stop a child signing up and saying that they are 18, as
well,
many
nothing.
Do already? So it's going to be interesting when there is a complaint, because potentially a tech site could say, well, look, we've done what you said. It's not our fault that your children have been brought up to be liars and crooks. We did what you said. You need to fix your education system.
Yep, these that's are exactly possible, what they'll say.
Possible outcomes, right? But you have kids. I do not. And one of your kids is sort of around the age, I think, that this starts to become a particular
issue. Yeah, Izzy's 11. So it's... And it does occupy some of my time, because she's ended up, I think, because one of her friends is on YouTube, she's ended up on adult YouTube watching her friends' videos, which I don't like, frankly, because I mean, YouTube is an absolute toilet. Now, as long as she's sticking to her own videos, that's fine. But also, I noticed she was ruining my recommendations with her Minecraft videos. And so I was annoyed. But then I thought, well, that's some of the things that I get recommended on YouTube, God knows how I get recommended them, but I wouldn't want children watching them. And I mean, obviously I'm an adult, I can watch what the hell I want, but even so, it's a bit concerning. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing to stop anyone from lying. And I think, I guess if you're an adult and you lie to restrict the amount of data they gather about you, you're just going to get a much worse service, aren't you? That's going to be the trade-off. So there's probably not going to be any adults doing that. And if children lie, well, they're already doing that, and the company is essentially off the hook. I'm assuming the legislation doesn't demand that any sort of formal ID is shown. So there's nothing anyone can do about it. Just one of those things. But the plus side, I guess, if everyone plays their part, these guidelines should work well and help and genuinely help people. Like there is potential there for some of what's been lacking from internet regulation. Like you say, the companies are never going to implement stuff like this through choice. They do have to be forced to do it. But it's good because it proves that they can be forced to do it. Although I'm a little bit annoyed they couldn't manage to make that acronym into Aardvark somehow.
There's a very interesting Q&A on the government website that I found actually about this. For example, one of the questions in here is around news media, because obviously some of the worst things people can run across on the internet are real life, unfortunately, and news outlets are specifically also covered by this code. They're not technology websites, technology sites in the sense that Facebook is. But the line here on the gov.uk is that there is no exemption for the news media in the provisions of the code. It says, given the evidence that children often use news media, many digital news media services will fall under the likely to be accessed by children test. These services typically process children's personal data to inform personalized news and digital advertising feeds, may also be shared with third parties for other purposes. That said, it says the ICO, Information Commissioner's Office, that is, recognises that digital news media are not a core concern for children online, so the provisions of the code can be applied in a risk-based and proportionate way to reflect this.
I think that's quite
interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I genuinely do agree.
Actually, sorry to interrupt you, but I hadn't previously seen the next question that came up underneath this underneath that one question that I had seen, because it sort of relates a little bit to the under 18 age test. One of the questions here is, will news media need to formally age verify their digital services in order to allow users to access news content? No. Says the government website. We recognize the importance of open access to digital news media, including for children to use it to learn about the world around them.
So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you know, you can see news on the news on TV, and it doesn't tend to be take a light approach just because it's 6 o'clock rather than 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me. And I don't know. I feel this myself quite a bit. You know, you'll be listening, if you listen to the radio when you're driving and the kids are in the car, some of the stuff that comes on the news it's really upsetting. And I do wonder what their little brains make of all this stuff. I think if kids notice things, they usually ask a question. For example, my daughter asked me about Grenfell. Something had been on the news, and I sort of tried to explain it a little bit. I didn't want to go into too much detail, obviously, because it's so horrible. So I sort of gave her the details. But it's been back in the news again recently because they think they're going to have to pull the tower down. It's a parent's job to try and help their children filter the news, but that doesn't stop them from seeing and hearing some fairly horrible things.
Very true. I mean, in a lesser way, I remember the first time my mother told me that she had been looking at comments on YouTube. And frankly, that's just not a conversation as a child, albeit one who's 36 years old, wants to hear from their mother, because
no,
I know
not really
what gets said in comments. And I don't want my mother being exposed to that. Thank you very much.
Absolutely comical what goes on in comments. I think the TikTok comments are the absolute best. It seems like, and there's a lot of good things about younger generations. You know, they're certainly very passionate and opinionated. And I don't think that's changed much. Like, I don't think there's much different about the 18-year-olds now who all have an opinion, and us as 18-year-olds who also had strong opinions. I think they see younger people now seem a bit more connected with the world. I don't remember 18 caring as much about current affairs as they do now. But also some of the opinions you're like, yeah, you think that now, but I think age will change that drastically. One of the things I saw on Twitter earlier was retweeted by Jeremy Vine, and this is relevant to you. You'll like this. Have you seen the video of the scooter guy who goes through a red light and gets pushed off by a passerby who's trying to cross the road?
Yeah, and Charlotte had tweeted Jeremy Vine tweeted well this week. Yeah,
yeah. Well, it was interesting because the comments on it fall into two very distinct categories. It's like the guy went through a red light; he deserves what he gets, or the guy assaulting him is wrong. And I was like, does no one here just see that both of these things are wrong?
Yes.
And that both things can exist at the same time in the same moral space. And that, yes, no, you shouldn't assault people. And no, you shouldn't go through red lights. But it's just, and it makes me laugh because that is what in internet discourse is like now, especially on Twitter. It is just people taking a side over everything, and I worry about that more with my children, because what do you do when a child thinks that there is only one answer to anything? Because that really isn't the way the world works, and that as impassioned and emotional as people get about things, sometimes there is more there than just, you know, the simple debate. So yeah, it's interesting.
Have you ever considered borrowing some educational lessons from one Richard Feynman of quantum science fame? Ah. Maybe explain the Schrodinger's cat.
That is a very good idea, actually.
You know, just go down that route. That it is possible for something to be wrong and wrong at the same time, and there to be no right. It does deviate slightly from the fundamental premise of trying to explain, you know, quantum superposition. But I'm sure you can interpret that to Izzy as needs be.
For sure.
But as far as going back to the news story here goes, one of the things the consultation that the government ran for this did highlight that basically it's going to be incredibly difficult to verify the ages. Like, you can say to a company you need to verify the age, but there's very little they can do short of demanding proof of identification or similar to actually be able to say with absolute certainty this person is the age they say they are, or at least is above the legal age they need to be to use a service or not. I think that'll be a very big challenge. And as we've seen with GDPR, fines have been issued, large ones. We had one recently issued actually this week, which we're not going to talk about because I'm bored of GDPR in general, against WhatsApp, over 220 million euros, I think it was. It's, you know, very, very big.
Yeah,
fine.
Ireland, right?
From Ireland, yeah. And they get appealed and so on and so forth. But, that you know, it's very difficult because a lot of the ways that these sorts of laws are designed, GDPR being no exception, is that you need to comply with the spirit of the law, if not just the letter of the law. And so with technology companies and consent, it gets very murky when you can do everything realistically you think in your power to comply, and yet you're still dealing with the fact that sometimes kids will be rebellious, and sometimes parents will just say they're a child so they don't get all the BS that comes with being an adult on the grown-up web. So it'll be very interesting to see how this unfolds. I don't think it's fundamentally a bad idea at all, but
be quite interesting to try it on, say, Instagram and see what the child experience is like.
Yes, I agree. And if anyone's got some views on that, you can send those to us in all the usual channels. Maybe tweet at us at TextMessagePod. The Register this week wrote a bit of something of a follow-up to something that came up in July, but I'm going to explain what's happened now rather than retrace our steps first, because the Register said that the names and home addresses of 111,000 British firearm owners have been dumped online as a Google Earth compatible data file that pinpoints domestic homes as likely firearm storage locations. Leaked online via an animal rights activist blog, actually stolen from originally back in July from the Gun Trader database, which we'll come to explaining shortly, was actually explicitly advertised as being importable into Google Earth, so anyone could, quote, contact as many owners as you can in your area and ask them if they are involved in shooting animals. The data includes names, home addresses, postcodes, phone numbers, email addresses, and IP addresses. Within this is a CSV file, comma separated values file, text file, along with precise geographic coordinates for a large number of the more than 100,000 people listed in the breach. Again, this is still according to the Register. It also said the file was linked to from the activist's blog, hosted in Iceland. Don't know if that's important. but it was, and presents a severe risk, apparently, to British firearm and shotgun certificate holders. But also, and this is the bit I'm particularly concerned about, is anyone who moved house to one of the addresses mentioned in this leak, because the data could be up to 5 years old. It's not unlikely that some people have moved house and are living in a house that once had a gun in it, no longer does. And obviously, that would be extremely troubling for anyone involved in a breach of the peace. On the other hand, it's very bad news for people who want to burgle a house. Now, I'll put it a different way, actually. This could be good news for people who own guns, because essentially this map is also a map of places not to try and burgle, because there is a maniac with a shotgun in there, potentially.
Well, yes and no, I think, to some extent. The gun ownership in the UK is quite different to the US, and it's not, as far as I know, it's not generally acceptable to defend your property with lethal force and a gun. No. But also, the rules in the UK are extremely clear. Guns, and I mean, obviously, there's, you know, people may not follow the rules, but if they get found out, they're in big trouble. But guns absolutely must be locked away in an approved gun case at all times when on your personal property. You would imagine that people would struggle to get a gun in time in the case of a home invasion. I just thought I'd add that in as a practical part of gun law. It's quite interesting because people obviously think that the UK doesn't have guns. We have quite a lot of guns, and many of them are perfectly legal to own. It's just the real restrictions are around handguns, but there's quite a lot of shotgun licenses, I would wager.
There are. And I mean, if you read the news, particularly online, of course, then you would probably rightly believe that every American owns 9 guns.
There is something like 300 million guns in America, I believe.
I imagine a lot of those are with armed forces, though. Not necessarily owned by...
Well, so a lot of gun owners have a lot of guns. There are obviously a lot of people that don't have any guns. But I think a lot of gun owners do have 3 guns, or 5 guns, or 200 guns.
Well, anyway, going back to the this site, I mentioned that it was first reported in July. Now, the BBC had written that the NCA, the National Crime Agency, had been investigating the data breach and its fallout. It said it was aware of the information had been published online as a result of the data breach that impacted GunTrader, and said they're working with organizations to manage risk. And the ICO is making inquiries. And in its initial statement in July, the BBC said, GunTrader said that no information about the location of firearms was taken, but acknowledged that usernames and addresses had been. The company said it had nothing to add in response to the latest development, quote, beyond saying that we continue to work with the relevant authorities to mitigate the impact of this theft.
So, I mean, this is extremely bad.
It is extremely bad, yes, because at the end of the day, there's a list of people who, under the letter of the law, own a gun for legal purposes and have had their details posted online by people with a motive to perhaps take a bit of vigilante action and do something about it, which is not right. However,
I mean, this is something that this country has done a lot of in the past, because there have been terrible, terrible things happen to people who are involved in animal experimentation. Now, I don't think anyone particularly likes animal testing particularly not for cosmetics, but also not for drugs. But it isn't sometimes a necessary evil, unfortunately.
I despise all animal testing and all shooting of animals.
Yeah, I mean, I don't generally approve of it either, but again, it isn't necessarily as easy as that.
No,
given
it's
that
not.
You know that foxes can be a pet. I mean, again, I think you can argue anything, but farmers will tell you that they need to shoot foxes, and that was part of what hunting did, was keep fox numbers down. Now, you know, I don't necessarily agree with any of that, but at the same time, it does seem to be something that they all agree on.
I don't want to get on my animal welfare, animal rights podium too much, and I'm on the verge of doing. So instead, I will pivot to just explaining a bit about this gun trader website, because I hadn't heard of it. I didn't know such a thing even existed in the UK. I suppose it's to my discredit that I didn't assume it would have, because we do have the legal use of guns, as you say, Ian, rightly, that a lot of it is farming and shooting as game is sadly legal, but legal nonetheless, and that is the law. And so Gun Trader, it turns out, it was founded in 2001, and so it's been going for 20 years. And according to its website, it says that for buyers, it's a marketplace to easily access the widest choice of shooting products. Seems fair enough. For sellers, it offers the most efficient and problem-free platform. I notice they need a hyphen there. Their grammar isn't as good as their availability of firearms, it seems. But they can have that for free. Problem-free platform with which to offer their products to the largest audience of buyers. Fine. And then for software users, and this is the bit that's essentially got them into bother, to deliver a registered firearm dealer up-to-the-minute software package that allows them to run their businesses efficiently. And apparently, again, according to its FAQ, it has about 380 UK shooting businesses that use the Gun Trader software. So I assume this is, you know, if you're involved in the gun trade, you know who has a gun license, and therefore you can integrate the system to perhaps target them with sales. I'm sure it's an awful lot more complicated than that, and I apologize for not doing them a credit for their sadly legal service, but there you go. I did find it a little bit unpleasant that their wording for this says that it's now in its sixth version and is to be found at the beating heart of more than 380 UK shooting businesses. I don't like that wording. I don't like the site, but I don't like that wording. Anyway.
No. I've been shooting. I mean, obviously not animals. I wouldn't do that. No. But I remember I tested an app. Do you remember Rob Follis had that audio app?
But he had many, didn't he?
Well, he did, yeah. One of them was for if you're cycling with headphones in, it would pick up noise around you.
I do remember that. So for those listening who don't know, Rob Follis did public relations for a lot of hi-fi companies that Ian and I worked with back at CNET.
Yes, indeed. And we went to his house together, didn't we?
Did we?
Yeah, do you not remember when we were at CNET? We went over to his fancy North London pad.
Oh, I remember going to his house.
Yeah, well, we went together once.
You being there. Interesting.
Yeah. But he had a similar thing for shooting, which enabled you to have some headphones in. As long as you were using an iPhone, you'd have some headphones in, and then you'd be able to, it would block out the sound of, you'd put them in under your ear defenders, and then people would be able to talk to you. But you'd still block out the noise of the gun firing. It was really quite clever. So he took me to a place in where the royal family learns to shoot, Holland and Holland, I think it's called. And I shot some absolutely incredibly big gun. I don't mind shooting inanimate objects. I've always hated guns and the idea that people would want to own a gun. But I've always enjoyed shooting at a range or something like that. I find it quite interesting and obviously a skill-based challenge.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all.
But yeah, I wouldn't be able to shoot an actual live thing. That would be, unless I was, you know, in a very desperate situation and needed to, I don't know. A lot of American gun ownership, and one of the reasons the debate is more nuanced than perhaps people think is that there are a lot of places in America where there are some quite ferocious animals that need to be sort of managed around your property. And sometimes that can mean having a gun to scare them off or...
I don't know. I'd say you built a house on their land.
So. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And of course, but you could make that argument. But bear in mind that some continents have a sprinkling more of dangerous animals than the UK does. And I suppose we're quite lucky that there's not really anything in this country that could threaten a human life and warrant the need of ownership of a gun. But yes,
I just wanted to mention one thing, because I didn't want to seem too much like a hypocrite and not mention that I had been once shooting with a laser. It was laser clay pigeon shooting with Lara Croft during a PR junket, I think it was, for one of the Tomb Raider games about 10 or 12 years ago. And they took us to a range where we used a laser mounted, like something you'd use for Laser Quest to shoot objects out of the sky that had reflective things on them, with a woman who was Lara Croft for one of the games.
She did gymnastics
at one point.
I'm assuming it was one of that generation of games, not the later generation of games. Did she have a very tight blue top on?
She, I've probably got a photo of it, actually, because they took a photo of us.
You've got a photo of everything, so that doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
Yes, I have. I will put it onto the, I'll put it on the website on uktechshow.com. If anyone wants to go and have a look at that, I'll pop it in the Discord later. But yes, it wasn't that era. It was probably about like 2009 or something.
Oh, so the latter one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So around the launch of what is it?
I want to say it was like Tomb Raider Underworld. I think it might have been.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. Something like that. But anyway, no. No creatures had to die on that day. Just I had a lot of fun with Lara Croft, and she told me she had to learn how to fire a crossbow underwater, which is one of the most badass things I've ever heard.
That is extremely badass.
Yeah. Anyway, if you have an opinion on this gun map ownership leak, if you are a farmer who would like to counter some of our strong views, I do welcome them. I'm always happy to be proven wrong. You've got your work cut out of you, for you, but all views are very welcome on this, and we'll read some out next week if you would like to send them to us at the usual places. Well, before we wrap up the show, I think it's time to hear from our podcastian brother from another mother, Mr. Tom Merritt, who's going to tell us what's been happening in the wider world of tech on DTNS this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, Apple in retreat. South Korea passes a law against limiting in-app payments in your app store. Although Korea was targeting Google, it does affect Apple. Apple pauses its plans to combat abusive imagery on iPhones, but it's not all bad for Apple. They might be taking advantage of some satellite connectivity in future iPhones, but it's probably not what you'd assume. Plus, why people in the U.S. are suspicious about digital driver's licenses, and why you might have Zoom dysmorphia. What it is, and how to combat it. That and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom. A couple of pointers on this, actually, funnily enough, Ian. So I'll be on DTNS on Tuesday coming.
Fabulous.
7th of September. I've read...
I've got a commute now, so I can listen to podcasts again.
Ah, excellent. Well, that'll be a good one, I'm sure. I also just read Tom's new audiobook, Project Vera, which I enjoyed greatly. Yeah. Not what I was expecting, but in a good way.
This is fiction, right?
It is fiction. Yes, it is fiction.
And a science fiction-y fiction?
Oh, yes.
Oh, might I give it a go? I recently, I bought the, and I suppose I shouldn't be. I always feel a bit of ashamed about this, but I read the most recent Andy Weir book, you know, he of The Martian. Now,
I liked it. Hail Mary.
Well, when I read The Martian, I read it in like a day and found it to be, although it's they're quite simply written, but actually I can't criticize him for that. It's an easy read. And I read Project Hail Mary and again, read it in like literally 24 hours, could not put the thing down.
Yeah, me too.
It's really good. So I'm always on the scout for interesting sci-fi. So if you recommend Tom's book, I'll definitely check it out.
I mean, I tend to listen to about two books a week at this point, so I can recommend a whole host of books.
I'm not listening to anything, mate. If I'm reading it, I'm using my damn eyes. I really didn't get on with Audible at all.
It's worth listening to this one because it's kind of partly dramatized almost. It's like different people do different characters.
Oh, okay. So it's not just read by one person.
No.
Because I can't call it reading. I tried to listen to Red Sparrow.
It's terrible.
It drove me up the wall.
It's annoying. I didn't like it. I actually returned it. I got my credit.
Oh, really?
Back for that book.
Yeah. Well, I'd already left Audible by then. I was so outraged by their stupid policy of you can only keep 7 tokens at a time that I cancelled the damn thing and I'll never return. I liked the service, But I thought, well, if I want to hoard my tokens until something comes along I want, then I damn well will.
Well, if you enjoyed this kind of tangential anecdote and a delve into Ian and I's personal woes and loves, then on the Patreon version of this week's episode, our patrons heard all about Three's latest 5G failings for Ian, and we battered around quite a few insights thereon, I believe, Ian. So,
yes.
If you wish to get that and our ad-free versions and extra message and so forth, go to patreon.com/UKTech, where you can get the full version of every episode and every back episode that we ever made. It's all there.
It's all in the archive.
On that note, which I believe is a C major this week, we'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.